in the letter. I'm trying to write a book on the bonus babies. Books sometimes are more difficult to sell than other times, and it's a long way from being through, so it's going to be a ways down the road. But anything before it goes in writing, anything I get from you, I will send to you first for you to check over. I don't want to ever be accused of misquoting anybody. And if we'll ask you, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 questions, something like that, and if you just answer as short or as long as you want, or if you want to add anything, please do. Okay. You signed in 1957. What was your bonus?
Well, it was a bonus of approximately $20,000.
Okay, what I found in talking to the bonus babies, the bonus, the actual bonus and the reported bonus were frequently very far apart.
I think mine was reported about 60.
Yeah, I
but it was a total of about 20,000.
Okay, I guess, I don't know that there's a reason for the reporting difference, and I've never been able to ascertain what that was. Public relations or something, I suppose. Who was a scout that signed you?
Jimmy Adair was the scout at the time.
Okay. How many teams were after you?
Oh, I probably talked with four or five other clubs about signing, but Baltimore was really the only one that I considered very long.
Okay. You signed directly out of high school?
Yes.
Okay. In Ada?
Yes.
Is there any chance your high school record may be available?
I went to school at Bing, B-Y-N-G.
Okay.
Which is Route 3 Ada.
Okay.
Down the country.
Somebody else went to Bing.
Kaiser.
Right. I talked to him about 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Well, I have written Bing asking about his record and haven't heard back, so if I don't hear about his, I suspect I won't have much shot at yours either.
I don't know how good a record they have on that kind of stuff.
Nowadays, you can get down to anything from the kids in high school, but back then, they kept a scorebook and then usually lost that as soon as the season was over.
Right.
Amateur ball in the summer, American Legion, something like that?
Yeah, I played American Legion baseball in the summertime. Two or three different places. We didn't have a club in Ada every year, so I did play them.
Okay. You know what your record was there?
I have no idea.
Okay.
It's hard for me to even remember that far back.
I know.
Some people can remember everything that happened for years and years, and they'll tell you name everybody who's on the team. I have trouble even remembering whether I played or not.
We're about the same age. You're a couple years older than me, and I know the feeling. I've got a son who plays college ball. He can tell you a pitch he threw to a kid when he was 13 years old and where the boy hit it. And I can vaguely remember even being around at that time. Did you go to college after you signed your professional contract?
After I signed and went directly into pro ball and to the major leagues, in fact.
Right.
I came back that winter and attended the school at East Central State Teachers College then. It's East Central University now,
uh-huh.
Oklahoma, which is in Ada. I went one semester and then I didn't go for about 7 or 8 years. And then I went back for 5 or 6 years, one semester at a time in the wintertime. And I currently have about 90 plus credits, I guess.
So almost.
Almost.
Yeah.
As close as I would get.
Yeah, my wife is back in school now. In fact, she's within a year of getting out, and she's almost 40. I can't imagine going back to school at that age, but more power to them. Do you know whose roster spot you took when you joined the Orioles?
No, I don't.
Okay. What time of year did you join?
I want to say in remember whether it was late June or late July.
Okay, but it was still...
It was the middle of summer, something.
Right, it happened, okay. A lot of the boys were signed, so they didn't report until after the September call-ups.
No, well, this was in June or July.
Okay. How were you received by your teammates?
I think very well. You look back at it, and look at the circumstances now, and you wonder. And I know when I signed, there was a lot of talk about, guys not treating the young fellas good, but I had no problem with it.
Pretty much, I've talked to several of the Orioles now, and pretty much the reception by the Orioles was much better than the reception that the boys received on other teams.
Well, I'd heard all that stuff that, players wouldn't treat you good, wouldn't help you and all that, but it was definitely not that way with the Orioles.
You had your manager there very much liked young players.
Right.
How did you feel about him, or how did you get along with him?
Well, I got along with him fine. Paul Richards was a very businesslike manager, and very little emotion. He didn't talk with the players a lot, especially during the game. But I just assumed that's the way it was, that
mm-hmm.
everybody was that way, and I had no problem at all with it.
What about coaching? And asking the young position players, they seem to all think the coaching was all right, but the young pitchers I've spoken with have told me the coaching was either deficient or non-existent.
Well, Paul Richards, was very much, I think, a pitcher's manager in that sense. He and Harry Burkeen spent time working with the pitchers. I think we got more attention than other players myself.
Okay. Well, that's certainly an exception to the rule with the other teams.
Paul was a catcher, and he made special note of especially the young pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
We have the young pitchers, too. He was always there with Harry, and I think we got plenty of attention.
How about the other pitchers on the staff? Were they helpful to you?
The pitchers were very helpful to me. Skinny Brown, in particular. Connie Johnson was there when I signed. Billy Lowe's, Ray Moore. All older pitchers, and all of them were very helpful to me.
That's good to hear. I interviewed both Connie Johnson and Skinny Brown in the last year for magazines, and they are really, really nice fellas.
Skinny was very, very close. I was very, very close with him.
He's in the, I guess the Orioles Hall of Fame now.
Yeah, I went back this summer when they put him in.
He's real proud of that.
And then I saw him at the end of the season at the function they had at the end of the year to close out Memorial Stadium.
Uh-huh.
We lived together in the spring with this couple up above the stadium there. I got very close with Skinny.
Yeah, I liked him very much. A couple of the boys, especially Jim Small, told me that when he was at home, he had to be home by 9 o'clock in his last year of high school, and then all of a sudden he signed and joined the Tigers in Detroit, and there were bellhops holding their hand out for tips. He said the adjustment to the change in lifestyle was something that was very, very difficult for him. Did you have that problem?
Well, it was somewhat of a problem for me because I'd really never been out of Oklahoma, and I had no idea about a lot of those things. And that's one of the areas that the older players helped me was to learn how to take care of myself and what was expected of us. And I think beyond the help on the baseball field, they definitely helped me off the field.
Was there anyone in particular, Brown perhaps, that gave you guidance off the field?
Do I?
Was there anyone in particular who gave you guidance off the field?
Kenny Brown.
Yeah. I guess it's pretty precarious situation, 18 years old, and all of a sudden away from home in a big city.
You know, you have no idea what to expect, and they definitely helped me. Of course, Harry Burkeen was the pitching coach, and he is from Ada also.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't close with Harry, but I knew him, and he and his wife Vera helped me a lot too.
Did you have you lived with Brown? Did you room with any of the Bonus Boys while you were there?
Brooks was up there. Let's see who else might have. I think Brooks and Ronnie Hansen. Strada might have been up there for a while, but I think that was the major group that lived up there.
And when you're away from the ballpark, were there problems living? And Ada was not at that time a metropolis. You have a problem with city life?
Well, I didn't really have a lot of problems with it. Not like I thought I would. But certainly there was a lot of learning to do in that area.
Yeah, I bet. A lot of the boys, and I guess it's the fact they're away from home, scared in a big city, married very, very young. Did you?
I married, signed in 57. I didn't get married till, I got married the end of 59 season.
Okay, so that was a little longer. A lot of the boys were married the first year or the second year, I guess just out of loneliness.
I went through the 57 season and 58, and my wife from Oklahoma, and I met her after the 58 season, and I knew her, but I mean, we started going together, and then we got married then the 59 season.
Okay. Back to your first year, you made a start against the Senators, and evidently it was pretty doggone good. Do you recall that?
Well, I made one that I didn't get through the first inning. First game I ever pitched in, I threw 11 pitches and 10 of them were balls.
Oh, boy.
And then I pitched a couple of times and threw the ball over the plate, and then I got a start, and I didn't pitch very good. Get through the first inning, and then I pitched more in relief, and then my next start I pitched a shutout.
Yeah, 1-0 shutout.
1-0 shutout, maybe 10 innings.
Oh yeah? I don't know what's that.
I'm not sure.
Well, overall, your first year record, and I've got all these things somewhere piled up here, but you probably had, there may have been one or two of the Bonus Baby pitchers that had a record as good as yours. None of them were overused, of course, but your ERA was under 3, and you had fewer hits than innings pitched. You got probably off to the best start of any, or as good as any of the other Bonus Baby pitchers. In 58, the rule was rescinded that allowed boys to be sent down instead of spending the full 2 years. Did you start the year in the minors, or did you start at Baltimore?
I started the year at Baltimore. I was with the club about 2 or 3 weeks, and I had hurt my hip in spring training. And after the season started and I didn't get to pitch, I pitched about 50, I want to say I pitched maybe 50 innings in spring training.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, you went to spring training. Pitchers went 3 or 4 weeks before everybody else.
Right.
I was in very good shape, I went about 2 weeks into the season, and my hip was bothering me, and I wasn't getting to pitch much, so they sent me to Knoxville.
I'm sorry?
He told me in spring training he was going to send me out.
Mm-hmm.
And the thinking was they were going to send me to Vancouver, which was the AAA club. And I made the club. And then with the hip problem, and I didn't pitch for a while. And they had changed their thinking in the meantime and said they wanted me to go to Knoxville and pitch regular in the rotation, and I went there and pitched that year, and then I was back at the majors the next year, back up at the end of the year.
You had no problem in Knoxville at all?
No, I pitched very well down there.
And when you came back up the next year, you had no problems the first half of the season anyhow.
Well, I pitched pretty good up there. I pitched some in relief and started some, and if I relieved, he pushed my start back a couple of days, you know, and gave me the rest I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, I pitched good that year.
Well, you were and still are the youngest starter and winner of an All-Star game. That must have been pretty doggone exciting.
That was very exciting.
Do you remember the time, or was it too much excitement?
Oh, I remember the situation very well. I pitched in relief in a game in Cleveland on a Saturday prior to the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
And Gus Tirandos was the catcher, and he was on the All-Star team. And I threw a pitch that was fouled off, and it hit him on the back of the hand. And of course, he was unable to go to the All-Star game. Now, on Sunday, this was the second All-Star game that year, so the game was played on a Monday. There was no off day other than Monday. And on Sunday, we were sitting in the bullpen looking at the other games and seeing that a lot of the guys that were in the All-Star game were pitching on that day, and wondering who was going to pitch. And I went in after the game, and they told me that I was going to the All-Star game. And I got on a plane in Cleveland and flew to Chicago, and when I got to Chicago, we spent the night there. And the next morning, I found out I was going to start. And we got to L.A. and got off the airplane and went directly to the Coliseum. And I pitched, and really it all happened before I knew what was going on.
Didn't give you time to think about it.
Really didn't.
That's probably good.
Most likely, very good. Most likely.
But you gave up one run in three innings?
Right.
Yeah. What happened in 1960, or after the All-Star game?
Well, there's nothing that I could say. The All-Star game was in August, and I think I was 8-5 at the time. And I don't think I pitched much different the rest of that year than I had up to that point. I pitched a 16-inning ball game that a lot of people would say, you know, finished me, but I can't say that it did. Only threw 170 pitches or something, and a lot of guys throw that many in a 9-inning game.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, I can't say that hurt me at all. The next year, I remember early in the year, I pitched some good ball games and wound up with a lot of no decisions early.
Mm-hmm.
And I had trouble with allergies and respiratory problems, which finally I had to get treatment for. And whether that was, you know, a big part of my problem, I don't know. And by that time, we had all the other young pitchers, and we were having a good year and winning, and I just never got back in the rotation. So, you know, there's nothing that I can put my finger on. Looking back at it from this end, you know, being I've been a pitching instructor, I think the thing that happened to me is the thing that happens to a lot of young guys. They come up and they just throw the ball and let movement take care of location. And they're not afraid to throw the ball over the plate. And then after a while, they get thinking, well, you know, I got that ball on the corner. I'm going to throw this one just off the corner. And you wind up get to thinking too much and get too fine. And I got to where I was getting behind, and then when I threw the ball over the plate, I got hit.
Yeah, well, that's always fatal.
You get to throw the ball over the plate and get hit, then you're afraid to throw it over the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking back at it 30 years down the road, I would say that if anything was a problem, that's what my problem was.
Do you know what medication you were on for your allergies?
Well, I took injections for a while, plus pills, and I don't remember how much.
Back then, and it's still pretty much the same now, antihistamines were used a lot, and
it was definitely an antihistamine sometimes.
Yeah, they can certainly, you know, maybe not consciously make you aware that you're subpar, but they can sure take the edge off. In fact, if I take one, I better be close to the bed because I'm going to wonder. But a lot of people, in horse races, we can't use them. Just enough, you know, not enough to make you actually groggy, but enough to take the competitive edge, or just the sharpness of your performance off.
Did you see the Breeders' Cup today?
Yeah, I was off and on. I was out of town for a while today, but I got back in time to see the last couple of races.
I just had turned it on before you called, and I guess it was over. I don't know.
Yeah, it started at noon, and that race every half hour or something since noon. A lot of money.
Yeah.
You can probably sign two or three good prospects for what those horses are winning. You were in the majors then through 1964, through the first part of 64. What happened after that?
In 64, I went back to the minors, and I was in the Cleveland organization at that time. I went to... they had McDowell and Teon and those fellas. I don't think they were with... Well, I'm not sure where they were with the club or where they were at Portland.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they were at Portland. And so there wasn't room for me out there, and they sent me to Jacksonville, which was the Cardinals AAA club, on a loan.
Mm-hmm. How long did you stay?
I spent the year there and then came back to Cleveland at the end of the year.
Okay, what, from that point, what was your career?
Well, after that, they took me off the roster that winter, and I pitched, which would have been 65 at Portland, AAA ball for Cleveland. And at the end of that season, my contract was traded to the Yankee organization. And I spent 66 in AAA ball with the Yankees. And then in 67, I was a player coach at Binghamton AA ball. And then I started managing, and I managed 5 years.
In the Yankee system?
Yankee organization.
Yeah. Okay, and then you were eventually Yankees pitching coach.
Then I scouted for the Yankees for a good while, different areas, and advanced scouting, and wound up briefly as the Yankees pitching coach. And then I went to Houston the following year, 83, for 3 years as pitching coach down there.
Mm-hmm.
Before I came to Detroit.
Let me ask you another thing about the bonus, and then we'll, if I may, I'd like to ask you some more questions about beyond that point. A question that's hard to answer, but I'll ask it anyhow. What, maybe it's not hard to answer, maybe it's easy. What is your opinion of the bonus rule?
Well, I guess I really don't have a definite opinion about it. It was a rule that, that other than get a fellow to the big leagues, didn't do a lot to help anybody, I don't think. The, players that were sent to the major leagues to sit on the bench for 2 years, most of them did not get to play enough to develop their skills the way they should. It held down money, and I think in some cases clubs did things that were illegal to get around the thing. I really doubt that it was a successful rule.
Some excellent players were bonus babies. Koufax, Kaline, Killebrew, and it's awfully hard. When you look at the statistics, you find a much higher percentage of outstanding ball players from the ranks of the bonus babies than from those who were not bonus players. But it's, the thing is, you wonder what would have happened to all those boys who spent 2 years, played 10 games, and were never heard from again if they had a chance to develop properly.
That's a question you don't know. It's just like the draft now. You can take the players that are selected in the first or second round, and percentage-wise, more of those guys wind up at the major league level than guys drafted, down lower.
Right.
But the difference in this rule was, how long Koufax is a bonus baby, and he sat up there for 2 years, but how long was it before he came back on the scene or before he really produced?
It was 6 or 7 years before he had
really got things together.
Sure.
And quite truthfully, if he was not a bonus baby, he might have been out pitching and hurt his arm and never pitched at all. You never know. It's just one of those things that you can argue about till the sun goes down, and you're still not going to know the answer.
Is it true? And I'm sure it is. But the team is going to try a whole lot harder with the boy they draft high, or in the case of the bonus baby, than they are with some kid they got for a bus ticket to the nearest ballpark or the 40th round.
Well, they've got money in.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna try to find out if he can play or not. He's gonna have to prove that he cannot. The fellow that they don't have money in is gonna have to prove that he can play. That's a fact of life.
Yeah.
Just like the number one drafts now have to prove year after year that they can't play, where the kid that just wants a chance, he has to keep proving every place he goes that he deserves to go to the next classification.
Right. That's the way it's been. I guess that's the way it's going to be.
I don't think it'll change. I really don't.
Well, by 1957, now I know this is you're 18 years old, and there's a man standing there waving more money at you than your father probably made in 5 years. So it's pretty hard to think straight. But by 57, the results of the earlier bonus babies had been seen. Did you have any second thoughts about being, kept in captivity for 2 years without much time to pitch?
No, I really didn't. I think, I think everybody feels like that they have the ability. Anybody that wants to play the game thinks they have the ability to survive and to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
And probably, after I got there and the first time or two I pitched, I might have had those feelings. But before I got there, no, I had no doubt about my ability and didn't think anything at all, because I knew that I wouldn't get to work pitch a lot, but that I'd get to pitch some and learn some things. I just didn't think about it.
Okay, real hard question. Did the rule hurt you?
I don't think so.
Okay. A lot of guys do. And you think that...
If I'd have had to sit there for 2 years, it might have hurt me.
Uh-huh.
see, the first year I was there for basically 3 months, July, August, and September. It must have been the first part of July that I signed in with you. But I was there about 3 months, and I learned a lot during that period of time. I pitched a little, and I learned a lot. Then you played doubleheaders on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and had Mondays off, and I threw batting practice every Sunday after the doubleheader if I didn't get to pitch. You know, if there were close games and I didn't get to pitch, well, then after it was over, I got to throw batting practice to Tito Francona and some other guys. I learned a lot. Some guys could be around baseball all their lives and, you know, have a good time and never learn anything.
Right.
I'm sure that some guys it did hurt, but I can't say it hurt me.
Good. Just looked up something here. Your debut was July 6th, 1957. Okay, that covers pretty much the bonus babies. Can I ask you questions further on?
Sure.
Okay. You were a good hitting pitcher. 1 year you hit 360 or 370.
Something like that.
Where is it? I've got it here. We're 368. For your career, 230, four home runs,